Welcome to Sonic Lit, a spoken web radio show. I'm Catherine McLeod, and I'm here with
Jason Camlott.
And every second week, we'll be bringing you literary audio to the airwaves of CJLO. We decided to call the show Sonic Lit because we'll be playing many different examples of literary audio. And today we're going to offer you a bit of a sampler of what you're going to hear on this radio show.
Yeah, the theme, if we want to think of a theme, is what is literary audio? It's a spoken web radio show because spoken web is a big research network that's been spending the last decade or so working with archives of recorded sound that document literary activities and events and performances. And we're constantly discovering new audio and new recordings that are of interest. And we thought this is a great venue to share those recordings in different ways and to share the things we've been thinking about when we listen to those recordings.
And this is the first spoken web radio show, but we hope that it'll be the first of many, perhaps inspiring spoken web researchers across Canada at many different universities, perhaps to start their own show. You're going to hear a lot about spoken web on this radio show, so get ready to hear about different ways in which researchers have been working with literary audio and a lot of literary audio itself. We're going to be playing you sounds on the today.
And I guess, what is literary audio? So that's our question of the day. Exactly. Catherine, what do you think of when you think of literary sound? What is literary sound? What are some adjectives, first of all, that you would come up with?
I think of rhythm and I do think of recorded voice. My go-to is I do think of poetry.
Yeah, I think pompous, you know, maybe a British accent. Those are some sort of potential cliches of what, you know, literature would sound like. A lot of the recordings we've been listening to have been poetry. I suppose one of those inherited sort of sonic imaginaries of what literary sound is goes back to beat poetry. You know, you go to poetry readings today, and I noticed that people have revived the snapping, you know, after a good poem. And I think that goes back to sort of the 50s and 60s when the beats were starting to perform and made reading poetry out loud a really important part of how poetry was being circulated. And maybe for that reason, we chose as our first track. Are we ready to go into our first track?
I think we're ready, yeah. That our first track is this sort of the literary audio that you might think of when you think of what does a poem sound like, or what does it sound like to go to a really cool poetry reading.
In my medicine cabinet, the winter fly has died of old age. Well, here I am, 2 p.m. What day is it? The tree looks like a dog barking at heaven. Prayer beads on the holy book, my knees are cold. In the morning frost, the cats step slowly. No telegram today, only more leaves fell. castle of the Gandharvas is full of aging young couples. Early morning yellow flowers, thinking about the drunkards of Mexico. The national scene, late afternoon sun in those trees. Nightfall, boy smashing dandelions with a stick. Holding up my purring cat to the moon, I sighed. August moon. Oh, I got a boil on my thigh. Drunk as a hoot owl, writing letters by thunderstorm. All day long, wearing a hat that wasn't on my head. Beautiful young girls running up the library steps with shorts on. Crossing the football field, coming home from work, the lonely businessman. Useless, useless, heavy rain driving into the sea. After the shower, among the drenched roses, the bird thrashing in the bath. The little worm lowers itself from the roof by a self-shat thread. Snap your finger. Stop the world. Rain falls harder. Nightfall. Too dark to read the page. Too cold.
So what'd you think, Catherine?
Well, it sounded like we were, it really sounded like when I think of, especially poetry of the beat time, like that was, felt like quintessential beat poetry. Like we were just really in that moment in time as well as in that sound. What did you think, Jason?
Yeah, I find those, so that was American Haiku by Jack Kerouac. And obviously there was a jazz saxophone player playing in the background. And I think Steve Allen, who had a show in the 50s and in the 60s, produced that record. And I find it weird, the American haikus, because haiku is a poetic form that you think of as a more visual form. It was one that was adopted by the imagist poets, and usually it was supposed to just go right from the page to your eye, to your imagination, and have a big effect that way. So the idea of reading haiku out loud is really interesting, but I think Jack Kerouac sort of took that genre, which is a mainly visual genre, as it was conceived, and in Americanizing it, sort of imagined it as a kind of sonic form. And I think the way he uses the haiku is it's like it's a little jazz riffs mm-hmm. in between the saxophone riffs. So he's kind of playing the haiku improvisationally almost as a way of having intense effects in short spurts, kind of like some of the jazz musicians that he admired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes me think too of like whether the saxophone is like really responding to the poems and like they're kind of having a conversation. That's actually something that Andrew Whiteman of the group Aurora that we're going to actually hear from later on the show has been working on with thinking about like making what he calls sonic poetry with recordings and kind of actually moving away from this kind of model where you have this, you know, the saxophone and the poet and actually thinking about kind of like using more sort of ambient mixes and like really thinking about the music as kind of maybe going beyond this sort of call and response just between the poet and saxophone. So you'll hear more about that on this radio show. So what's up next? Where do we go sonically from Jack Kerouac?
Well, I guess what we're trying to do today is just explore some different sounds of literature. And we're going to go next to, is it Sylvia Plath?
Yeah, I think we were thinking another really like quintessential poetic voice that also might be one that you recognize. Jack Kerouac might be a voice that you recognize. And similarly, Sylvia Plath, whether it's her voice or her voice in the poems, is quite well known. So we thought we'd sort of start with what you might think of as a poetic sound. So we're going to hear Sylvia Plath reading the poem Daddy.
You do not do, you do not do, any more black shoe in which I have lived like a foot for 30 years, poor and white, barely daring to breathe or hachew. Daddy, I have had to kill you. You died before I had time, marble heavy, a bag full of God, ghastly statue with one gray toe big as a Frisco seal, and a head in the freakish Atlantic, where it pours bean green over blue in the waters off beautiful Nauset. I used to pray to recover you, ach du, in the German tongue in the Polish town, scraped flat by the roller of wars, wars, wars. But the name of the town is common. My Polack friend says there are a dozen or two. So I never could tell where you put your foot, your root. I never could talk to you. The tongue stuck in my jaw. It stuck in a barbed wire snare. Ich, 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 ich. I could hardly speak. I thought every German was you. And the language obscene, an engine, chuffing me off like a Jew. A Jew to Dachau, Auschwitz, Belsen. I began to talk like a Jew. I think I may well be a Jew. The snows of the Tyrol, the clear beer of Vienna, are not very pure or true. With my gypsy ancestress and my weird luck and my tarok pack and my tarok pack, I may be a bit of a Jew. I have always been scared of you, with your Luftwaffe, your gobbledygoo, and your neat mustache and your Aryan eye, bright blue. Panzerman, Panzerman, oh you, not God but a swastika, so black no sky could squeak through. Every woman adores a fascist, the boot in the face, the brute, brute heart of a brute like you. You stand at the blackboard, Daddy, in the picture I have of you, a cleft in your chin instead of your foot. but no less a devil for that, no, not any less the black man who bit my pretty red heart in two. I was 10 when they buried you. At 20, I tried to die and get back, back, back to you. I thought even the bones would do. But they pulled me out of the sack and they stuck me together with glue. And then I knew what to do. I made a model of you, a man in black with a Mein Kampf look and a love of the rack and the screw. And I said, I do, I do. So, Daddy, I'm finally through. The black telephone's off at the root. The voices just can't worm through. If I've killed one man, I've killed two. The vampire who said he was you and drank my blood for a year. 7 years, if you want to know. Daddy, you can lie back now. There's a stake in your fat black heart, and the villagers never liked you. They are dancing and stamping on you. They always knew it was you. Daddy, daddy, you bastard, I'm through.
Have you just arrived in NDG? Do you want to learn French? Are you looking for a job? Would you like to get to know your neighbors better? Since 2012, Bienvenue à NDG has been welcoming people newly settled in the neighborhood by offering support to orient themselves, integrate, and feel at home. Supported by the NDG community, Bienvenue à NDG is a non-profit organization whose mission is to facilitate the integration of immigrant persons into the community life of Notre-Dame-de-Grâce as well as into the host society and to promote intercultural relations. Our services are free and we can serve you in more than 20 languages. Join our community. Feel free to visit our website, bienvenuendg.ca, and make an appointment with our integration counselors. In partnership with the Government of Quebec.
Ashes to Ashes is your home for modern pop in all of its forms, whether it be synth pop, hyper pop, ambient pop, or anything else ending in pop. Along with bops, the show features interviews and performances from an always growing list of emerging and established pop artists from both the local Montreal music scene and abroad. So tune in at 7 p.m. every Tuesday on CJLO 1690 AM and CJLO.com.
Hey, this is Mark Mullane from Crypto Rips. You're listening to CJLO in Montreal.
Welcome back to Sonic Lit. I'm Catherine McLeod, and I'm here with Jason Camelot, and we're listening to some poetry. So what do we have next, Jason, for our listeners?
Yeah, so we just heard Sylvia Plath reading her poem Daddy, which is pretty intimate and intense when you listen to that one, mm-hmm. because it's in sort of the confessional mode, and she's really laying into someone, maybe multiple people. But when we think of what literature sounds like, I think we want to think in a longer frame of time. And so the next one we chose is a pretty early recording. It's actually from 1905. It was recorded on an Edison cylinder, which was the earliest sound recording medium. I mean, just after tinfoil recording. So, and it's an example of how people recited poetry at the end of the 19th century. It might sound a little weird to us today, so it requires a little bit of sort of rhetorical acclimatization to reading styles. It's a poem called Laska, recited by Edward Davenport, and it's a cowboy poem.
Laska, by Edgar L. Davenport, Edison Records.
I want free life and I want fresh air, and I long for the canter after the cattle. The crack of the whip like shot in battle. The green beneath and the blue above, and dash and danger and life and love and laughter. Laska used to ride on a mouse gray Mustang close to my side, to ride with me and ever to ride in Texas down by the Rio Grande. But once when I made her jealous for fun at something I'd whispered or said or done, she drew from her bosom a dear little dagger, and quick, sting of a wasp, it made me stagger. Well, scratches don't count in Texas, down to the Rio Grande. The air was heavy, the night was hot. I sat by her side and forgot the herds that were taking their rest, that the Texas norther comes scudding in soon, in the dead of night or the blaze of noon. And once let that herd at its breath take fright, there's nothing on earth can stop its flight. Was that thunder? I sprang to the saddle and she clung behind. Then away on a hot race down the wind, for we rode for our lives in Texas down by the Rio Grande. There's one chance left, and you have but one. Halt, jump to earth, and shoot your horse. Crouch under his carcass and take your chance. The cattle were gaining. And just as I felt for my six-shooter behind in my belt, down came the Mustang, and down came we, clinging together. What was the rest? A body that spread itself on my breast. Lips that close to my lips were pressed, as over us surged that sea of tears. And when I could rise, Laska was dead. I gouged out a grave a few feet deep, and there in Earth's arms I laid her to sleep. And I wonder why I do not care for the things that are like the things that were. Does half my heart lie buried there in Texas, down by the Rio Grande?
What an ending, eh?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that music towards the end. It made me, almost, was it playing the whole time?
No. Yeah. So he actually did 8 different recordings of that poem on different record labels. And every record label back in at the turn of the century had its own in-house band, and some of them were used more than others.
Okay.
The Edison Company and their recording studios didn't use a lot of music for the recitations, but he did other recordings for Victor, where he had a band playing throughout. They were doing sound effects. So when the sound of the stampede was happening, there were drums going and all kinds of stuff. So that was a very subtle little use of music at the most moving part after his love, Laska, is trampled by a bunch of cattle.
That was, I noticed you said it was recited, that poetry, you know, so often we hear a poem like read by the author, but it was maybe more common in the late 19th century into the 20th century to have it read by an actor or maybe like a professional, person who would recite poems really as their specialty. The next poem that we're going to hear, I believe that's one of them. Edith Evans, she was an actress that was reciting the poem. Is that correct?
This next one will be Edith Evans. So that last one was recited, I said, by Davenport, but the poem was by Frank Desprez, and it was actually published in the 1880s, but he recorded that in 1905. And he was a professional recording artist.
Right.
Edith Evans was a stage actress.
Okay.
And she was hired to do a lot of literary interpretations of poems when record companies started selling those as well. And so we're going to be hearing Edith Evans reading a very well-known poem by William Blake called The Tiger.
Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night, what immortal hand or eye could frame thy fearful symmetry? In what distant deeps or skies burnt the fire of thine eyes? On what wings dare he aspire? What the hand dare seize the fire? What the hammer, what the chain? In what furnace was thy brain? What the anvil, what dread grasp dare its deadly terrors clasp? When the stars threw down their spears and watered heaven with their tears, did he smile his work to see? Did he who made the lamb make thee? Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night, what immortal...
Spreading their wings.
That was beautiful, Catherine, but that wasn't literature, was it?
Well, it was. That was a group called Aurora, which are composed of the musicians Andrew Whiteman and Ariel Engel, both based here in Montreal. And they were performing poetry by the American poet Alice Notley. So believe it or not, you were hearing a poem. And that piece that you heard, that was track one from the album by Aurora that came out a few years ago now, in 2013. But that was the first track off the album. And the tracks are actually named after the sections of poems. So that was number 14. Very mysterious name.
Track one, number 14.
Number 14, exactly. Yeah. So if you want to listen to some more Aurora or hear that again, that was track one, number 14. I really love the line in there that I was born to be a poet. So we have some, it was a poem about poetry along with it being performed.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, although the Edith Evans reading William Blake's The Tiger sounded sort of like from a completely different world than that track, there may be some connections around sort of mysticism surrounding these works.
Because,
you know, Blake believed that he saw spirits and also, if this may not be known by everyone, but Blake actually did memorize and recite his poems on any occasion that arose for him. So he would go to pubs and stand on the tables and shout out his poems aloud. And The Tiger comes from a book called Songs of Innocence and Experience. So he really conceived of them in a way as songs.
Right, as songs. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're just waiting for someone to perform that, to a new mix. Maybe Andrew Whiteman and Ariel Engel will take that up for their next performance. Well, thinking though, the other thing about that, which you really responded to, was like almost thinking, oh, is that music? And next up, we have some literary audio that could also really sound like music, but that's because it's a performance by Toronto-based dub poet Lillian Allen. And this is poetry, this is music, this is spoken word, this is dub poetry. It's from her album, her really classic album, Revolutionary Tea Party, and it's a track called Rhythm and Hard Times.
Thank you. dead. But this your country, Hardy. But this your country, Hardy. And where we come here for? We come here for better.
That was Lillian Allen, Rhythm and Hard Times from Revolutionary Tea Party. So we've been playing many different examples of literary audio, and that one was really a lot like music. Well, it was music. And the next example we're going to play is something kind of, I know it's like, how would you describe it, Jason? Is it going to be music? Is it going to be something else?
Well, I think this next piece we're going to play gets us thinking about like where poets are when they're recording their literature. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the recordings we'll be playing are live performances of readings that took place somewhere, and you can hear the crowd in the background. Others were recorded in a recording studio, like the Lillian Allen piece we just heard. Mm-hmm. But a lot of artists, especially from the 50s on, started using sound and soundscapes as part of their poetic composition. So the next piece is a strange little piece from the larger archive of Allen Ginsberg, called A Mad Gleam, that's kind of a mixture of radio noise and all kinds of other sounds with a poem that he's performing in a kind of lo-fi aesthetic. And I think we're going to go right from that into another Ginsberg recording of him reading in situ, sort of in a place, you know, so you get the sense of him like happy that he's fooling around with an audience while he's reading. And so we have these two examples of Ginsberg in two different kinds of recordings from the larger archive. And I guess one of the other reasons we chose these is that spoken web archives have all different kinds of recordings. Many of them were live events, but a lot of them were, you know, we don't even know necessarily how they were made. And so it's interesting when listening to literary sound to try to figure out, like, you know, how did this piece come about? Where did it come from? What were they doing? Was it fabricated? Was it, you know, accidental, some of the noise that we hear, you know?
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, with listening to this, we'll think about, like, where we imagine this recorded moving from A Mad Gleam into America. And these are both by Allen Ginsberg.
Go back to Egypt and the Greeks, where the wizards understood the spirit haunted where man seeks and spoke to ghosts that stood in blood. Go back to the old legend. The soul remembers and is true. What has been most and least imagined, no other, there is nothing new. The giant phantom is ascending toward its coronation, gowned with unheard music, yet unending. Follow the flower to the ground.
An unfinished poem, which I'll finish sooner or later, but I'd like to read the first half of now. America, I've given you all, and now I'm nothing. America, $2.27, January 17th, 1956. America, I can't stand my own mind. America, when will we end the human war? Go fuck yourself with your atom bomb. I don't feel good. Don't bother me. I won't write my poem until I'm in my right mind. When will you be angelic? When will you take off your clothes? When will you look at yourself in the, through the grave? When will you be worthy of your million Christs? America, why are your libraries full of tears? America, when will you send your eggs to India? I'm sick of your insane demands. When will you reinvent the heart? When will you manufacture lambs? When will your cowboys reach Spengler? When will your dams release the flood of eastern tears? When will your technicians get drunk and abolish money? When will you institute religions of perception in your legislatures? When can I go into the supermarket and buy what I need with my good looks? America, after all, it is you and I who are perfect, not the next world. Your machinery is too much for me. I don't want to work for a living. You make me want to be a saint. There must be some other way to settle this argument. I don't want to die young. I want to die old and unhappy. I don't mind dying so long as it's not sorted. Now, Burroughs is in Tangiers. I don't think he'll come back and is sinister. Are you being sinister or is this some form of playing a practical joke? I'm trying to come to the point. I refuse to give up my obsession. America, stop pushing. I know what I'm doing. America, the plum blossoms are falling. America, I haven't read the newspapers for months. Every day somebody goes on trial for murder. America, I feel sentimental about the Wobblies. America, I used to be a communist when I was a kid. I'm not sorry. I smoke marijuana every chance I get. Only $2.27. I don't want to work. Maybe it's just looking for the job. I can't study anymore. I'll never teach for a living. I sit in my house for days on end without going out. When I go to Chinatown, I get drunk and never get laid. My mind is made up. There's going to be trouble. You should see me reading Marx. The American flag is absolutely meaningless to me, still just as it was in the 30s. I won't say the Lord's Prayer. I have mystical visions and cosmic vibrations. America, I still haven't told you what you did to Uncle Max after he came over from Russia. I'm addressing you. Are you going to let your emotional life be run by Time magazine? I'm obsessed by Time magazine. I read it every week. Its cover stares at me every time I pass the corner of northwest of Sutter Street and Montgomery Street. I read it in the basement of the Berkeley Public Library. Time magazine is always telling me about responsibility. Businessmen are serious. Movie producers are serious. Everybody's serious but me. It occurs to me that I am America. I am talking to myself again. Asia is rising against me. I haven't got a Chinaman's chance. I had better consider all of my natural resources. My natural resources consist of 2 sticks of marijuana, millions of genitals, an atom bomb, and 2,500 mental institutions. I say nothing about my prisons or the millions of underprivileged who live in my flower pot. I have very few bordellos, and that's all there is. I have abolished my whorehouses in France, and Tangiers is the next to go. My ambition is to be president despite the fact that I'm a capitalist. America, how can I write a holy litany in your silly mood? I will continue like Henry Ford. My strophes are as individual as his automobiles. More so, they're all different sexes. America, I will sell you strophes at $2,500 apiece, $500 down on your old strophe as trade-in, and the rest of your life is to pay. America free, Tom Mooney. America save the Spanish loyalists. America, Sacco and Vanzetti must not die. I am the Scottsboro boy.
You are!
America, when I was 7, my mother took me to a communist cell meeting. They sold us bupkis, a handful per ticket. A ticket cost a nickel, and the speeches were free. Everybody was angelic and sentimental about the workers. It was all so sincere, you have no idea what a good thing the party was in 1835. Scott Nearing was a grand old man, a real mensch. Mother Bleuer made me cry. I once saw a Browder plane. Everybody must have been a spy. America, you don't really want to go to war. America, it's them bad Russians. Them Russians, and them Chinamen. And them Russians. The Russians are power mad. The Russia wants to eat us alive. She wants to take our cars from out our garages. Her wants to take our factories. Her wants to corrupt our college girls. Her wants to put us all in slave labor camps. Her wants to emaciate us like skeletons. Her wants Malenko or Buganin or somebody to be our boy. Her wants to dictify us. Him, big bureaucracy running our filling stations. That's no good. Look, we'll make Indians learn read. Ha! Him need niggers. Whoa! Her make us all work 16 hours a day. Help! America, this is quite serious. America, this is the impression I get from reading the newspaper. America, is this correct? I'd better get right down to the job. It's true, I don't want to join the army or turn lathes and precision parts factories. I'm nearsighted and psychopathic anyway. America, I am putting my queer shoulder to the wheel.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Blue. Crossover Comics, sharing your passion since 2012.
For the best new music from around the globe, with a respectful nod to the musical pioneers of the past and a whole lot more, join me, Danny Payne, on The Pressure Drop every Monday at 5 on CGLO 1690 AM or CGLO.com.
Who's that internet station? Who's the college station to all the chicks?
CGLO!
You're damn right. Who is the station? It gets everybody, master.
Watch your mouth! CGLO!
Damn right. CGLO's a bad mother.
Not for the CRTC to hear.
We're back with Sonic Lit. You're listening to me, Catherine McLeod, and Jason Camelot talk about literary audio and play you literary audio. We before the break heard America by Allen Ginsberg. And when listening to that, we were sitting here in the booth, like, laughing ourselves, because we were couldn't believe that, like, almost after every line, there was a roar of laughter from the audience. And, you know, it almost sounded like we were listening to comedy. Do you think, I don't know, Jason, was that poetry? Was that comedy? Is that something in between?
It was definitely poetry, but it was poetry that people found funny.
Yeah. Do you, I don't know, this makes me think, like, when you think of poetry that's funny, is there, I don't know, any poem or recording that you think is, like, maybe the funniest?
For me, the funniest literary sound recording, and it goes back to what I was saying before about the haiku, which is a form that I don't necessarily think of as a really good oral form, because it's, you know, intended to give you a strong visual effect, is a well-known poem, one that back in the day was taught in every high school across North America by William Carlos Williams, called The Red Wheelbarrow.
Oh, I bet some listeners, when I even just with that title, but let alone like the first lines, they might think, oh yeah, I remember that poem. I had to read that poem in high school. The Red Wheelbarrow it's really short.
Yeah, I mean, you know, think of this, William Carlos Williams standing up to the podium to give a poetry reading, and this is what he reads.
The Red Wheelbarrow. So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens.
And that's it. It's kind
that's
of punk,
it.
Actually, if you think about it. It's like, you know, a short punk song. Like,
yeah, and imagine if that just someone stands up and just that's that. So much depends on that. It also strikes me too that to read these short imagistic poems, it's really all about the visual, and we can think about like what they sound like, but really like what came to mind as he was describing those things, and like so much depends upon that image being constructed.
Yeah, I think I find that recording really amusing, in part because I'd read it and I'd been taught to read it as this really powerful imagistic poem that was sort of rich in some kind of other deeper symbolic meaning. And then you hear him read it, and it's just his voice, the Red Wheelbarrow, and it just sounded really, you know, at odds in a way with the seriousness with which that poem was taught to me. You know,
so. Yeah, and that one, that must have also been on a recording, like a vinyl record of like poems by William Carlos Williams or something like that. Because it didn't sound, we didn't hear ruckus, you know, applause or laughter in the background.
No, and I should say William Carlos Williams, the haiku are kind of an anomaly for him. He wrote mostly book-length, very long poems. One of his best-known poems is Patterson, which is kind of a personal phenomenological account of the little area in New Jersey that he came from, and it's novel length, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's the other reason I find that recording funny. It's just that, you know, everything else he wrote was so long, and here's this little poem that's 15 seconds. You know?
Yeah. Well, no, that was a great one to play on this first episode of Sonic Lit. We're going to round off the show by hearing a poet who really was a longtime organizer of poetry events and had a radio show, but with a poetry radio show, was a poet, musician, really community organizer, Ian Ferrier. And, you know, thinking about the difference between the Red Wheelbarrow and what we're going to hear, this poem by Ian Ferrier, it does feel like a long, like, phenomenological rambling poem that is set to music. So I feel like this is a really perfect poem to hear at the end of this show, where we've been giving some examples of different kinds of literary audio. Some of it has been more musical than others, and so to end with something that is musical, but we've really gone far from the saxophone at the beginning. We're really into really almost like a musical, but also ambient space in this piece by Ian Ferrier that's called Blue Train. So, Jason, do you think, I don't know, in what comes next with our shows? Where are we headed on this in this Sonic Lit? Do you think we'll hear more Montreal artists?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, we've heard two really great Canadian artists among the mix. And we're thinking that one of our next shows, maybe not the next one, but sometime soon we'll do a show that focuses exclusively on Montreal spoken word and poetry sound artists, because there's so many great artists in the city. Kai Kello, Juana Avicilo-Kai. Yeah. Ian Ferrier ran the Words and Music show for 20 years mm-hmm. at the Casa, which gave a stage to all kinds of spoken word artists in the city. And so we're going to want to honor that for sure.
Yeah. So we'll head out of this first episode by listening to Blue Train by Ian Ferrier. This has been Sonic Lit with Catherine McLeod and Jason Camelot. Tune in next time.
I hopped what I thought was a freight car, but of course it wasn't a freight. I was in the Badlands, in those wild Alberta hills around Drumheller, where the dinosaurs lived some 70 million years ago. I was clambering from one car to the next when I saw it. Up ahead in the darkness, this unearthly blue color, as if blue neon had spilled out and contaminated the groundwater. And of course I wasn't taking precautions. Before I knew it, a huge patch of the stuff had splashed up onto my bare